Hi, everybody. I am Susan Alatrico with you this morning to present or offer addiction through the Eightfold Path, meaning a way for sanity to arise, if you will. I'm trying to have a view of one person. It's hard. Oh, well. I'll just deal with the little boxes. So, good morning again. So the journey, I hope, and it's going to be my 20-minute best. I wish I had an hour, but I don't. I've got 20 minutes because Fridays are a longer discussion period, and I've got notes galore, and talking about the Eightfold Path is, you know, a mouthful. So I'm going to set my timer and I'm just going to do it and we will see where we're at the end of this, at the end of this. So my path in this, I did come to Dharma through the 12 steps. So it's like culture. I can't take that out. I can't take it out. So this is my experience I'm going to offer. And I have been doing a lot of reading and with Valerie Mason John and Kevin Griffin and Buddhist recovery. And you know what? The two traditions point to the same solution of non-self, of powerlessness and living life outside the ego and or within, but outside of that, the stresses of always grasping. So I wanted to start with two things. Tibetan Rinpoche Soigal has a statement. However desperate you become, accept your pain as it is, because it is in fact trying to hand you a precious gift, the chance of discovering through spiritual practice what lies behind your sorrow. And in sign language, the sign for addiction is a crooked, pointed finger hooked inside the cheek. Like a fish on a hook, continuously yanking the fish wherever it desires, the phenomenon of craving is like that. And so let me back up a little bit, though. My addiction was, I believe, is really a search for wholeness. I was seeking relief from this relentless self that was inserting everything was about me. So I believe that I was trying to find happiness. But I didn't know that it didn't reside in the thinking mind. So I was being yanked in the direction of, endless pleasure, praise, seeking fame, seeking attention, seeking, an aversion of all the opposites. So in recovery, I wanted to frame a couple words that I like the idea of recovery, meaning to reclaim that which was lost. And for me, it relates to the heart opening. And sanity, sobriety is sanity. The Eightfold Path is sanity. And as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, all we have to do is start and continue this path. We don't have to do it perfectly. So Right View says, we got to straighten out our view first. And I have a funny story about that, because when I went into a recovery and I called up my dad and said, hey, I'm going to AA, he sent me a book called The Cult of Recovery. And I took that to my person known as a sponsor or a coach who lead me through this spiritual path. And she said, you know what? My brain needed washing. And I said, oh, my God, I can relate to that. My brain needed washing. It was so diluted. I believe that the addiction that I, and maybe it wasn't necessarily grounded in the sense pleasures. It was deluded. It was delusion, which means I was blind. And that's based in you know, in ignorance. So my right view needed to be straightened out. And so in faith is like the first step you take off the path, as we learned in transcendental co-arising faith. I needed faith in something that I didn't know was on the other end. And what I did know, I had somewhat of a fourth sight, an inspiration. And that was, an author wrote in a book, "Don't Be Afraid of What's True." And at that time, I was so vulnerable and my heart cracked. And I saw the addiction standing there. And I said, okay, I'm going. And that was the beginning of my path. So what does it mean to have right view? It's a real acknowledgement that I'm not in charge. I have to stop playing God, the director that's setting the lights, running the show, investing so much in life, in my world, that there was no room for living in uncertainty, because I thought that's what I was supposed to do. You know, I was always achieving to be something, because I had nothing inside. I was always trying to fill up the outside, comparing myself to the world. Yet, because I was so empty inside, there was nothing I could do but try to fill it. An example is in a counselor's office with a partner at the time. And the relationship was ending. He told her that, "I'm doing everything a man could possibly do, and it's not enough. I had insatiable craving, and I didn't know how to fill it." So, you know, the wrong view that I had was this constant seeking praise, perfection, and in that process, it creates a separation from people, and I was not connected to people intimately. I was always, you know, 2 feet apart, because there was a part of me that could not let anyone see this fault, this you know, this uncertainty, this emptiness that I had. And I had to start facing some fears. And one way I did that was something that I had in my life for a long, 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 long time, which was my spiritual teacher, was a horse. And one way I started to confront fear as someone who did have trauma in my life as a young a child, and adverse living situation or whatever you want to call it, that she was my refuge. I didn't have to go to people. I could go to her. And also something I thought I could control, though she was pretty uncontrollable. So I was always afraid of her, though I really, you know, riding her and controlling her, but I was afraid of her. And one of the things that I couldn't do was clean her undercarriage. And the vet finally said, "You know, you got to do this." And I was so afraid she was going to kick me. But I said, "I'm going to face my fear. I'm going to do it anyway." And so there I am reaching under, and she's, you know, lifts her leg. I think she's going to strike me. And then she lifts her leg about as high as my shoulder so I could get under her and clean her. And she was turning, it was turning into such a pleasurable moment for her. I totally saw this delusion of fear, false evidence appearing real. And that set me on a course of more confidence in this. Wow, there's something else that I can use as my navigation system. Right intention. Where am I looking for power? I have to renounce these thoughts. And I was also told that, you know, I don't have to believe my thoughts. Well, what a concept. How in the world could that be true? Well, I started practicing with that. And I started to connect with a power that wasn't through my intellectual thinking and wasn't based. It was letting go and willingness to listen to a different voice. Willingness to live by principles that I really didn't know about, but they said they were spiritual in nature. of honesty, willingness, and having an open heart. That's all, an open mind. That's all I had to do. So looking in that way of in the direction of an intention, having a new navigation system, harmlessness and what was the other piece? They naturally, you know, goodwill, you know, releasing the protection and naturally comes about, and which also then kind of naturally flows into your behavior and speech. And it's an extension of that, kind of naturally flows this goodness, this intention to be in touch with what is true at all costs is more important than the suffering, because we see the suffering and we're like, I don't want that anymore. I don't know what awaits on the other end, but I don't want that anymore. And so moving with that flow of wisdom and the practice that's asking us to be careful and caring about ourselves and others through, you know, our speech. Well, my speech was always about being true, because I knew what was true. And I would tell you that, my friend, and was always in conflict with that, with people. In fact, I was so invested in myself and speaking my truth, I made people cry at work because they didn't involve me in a meeting, in a project, and I was so essential to everything that happened in my life. So essential. A lot of pain there I caused in others too. So what's also really interesting is in this process is, you know, we dispense of that only I know what to do kind of life. And, you know, I know people relate to this outside of, you know, the addiction, because most of us live that way. And, you know, and there that's self investing in everything that's is happening, being so driven, being so full of pressure to perform, and what and so letting go and moving toward practicing spiritual principles in every in you know, speech and action, how we show up with people, how we show up at work, and, you know, an effort to let go of behaviors that cause harm. And, you know, it's a process. I wish I could radiate these values and qualities without telling people what to do. I still don't know how to do that very well. You know, this is all I'm asked to do is start this path and continue it. And there's a lovely Dhammapada verse, 239, that says, by degrees, little by little, from moment to moment, a wise man removes his own impurities, the defilements, greed, hatred, delusion, as a goldsmith removes the dross or silver. And as Arv was pointing to, we do this moment to moment, realizing the true nature of things, impermanent, passing through us, passing through what holds us. And we can bring these positive values, this new way of living to life, to be of service wherever we go. I remember this having such an epiphany around my sponsor telling me, you know, you could just be of service at work. And I'm like, what? I don't have to be tied to the results. I don't have to. No, you just suit up, show up, do your best and leave. That's the flow of life. I couldn't figure that out by myself. That was what freed me at work. Because I would never be one of those folks who would talk and socialize at work. I was like, well, you know, you're not doing your work. I couldn't relax into that. But so being of service, just showing up, doing your best and letting it go is having is relinquishing an investment, you know, in the me. It's the thinning of me, myself, what I need. And so that's related to, you know, right effort about how in the world we can maintain or cultivate these qualities. I want to say that in addiction, being out of the body is, you know, part of the deal. So entering the body and being in touch with the four aspects of the heart, as Valerie Mason John offers them, as affection, appreciation. What's the other one about joy? Joy. It's an A word. Anybody? 2 points. Shoot. Okay. And then the last one, acceptance. All right. I can't think of it. They start to also be part of appreciation. Thank you. Mudita appreciation. Somebody remembered. These become, you know, part of the guiding, the fuel for right effort. And as Utanjaniya says, unwholesome states of mind are very skillful at taking their place in the mind, just like musical chairs. Boom, they're ready to sit down. So we need to cultivate through mindfulness, right effort, concentration, you know, to replace them with the wholesome behaviors that we want to create and recognize loving kindness, seeing our own goodness, and practicing with them and seeing them for what they are. And that is an illusion of self. Let me check my time. Good. So how we do that, you know, it's kind of like get out of our own way. And then when we're still, as Arv was pointing to in the meditation, when we get out of our own way and we are abiding in a stillness or an acceptance of life is going to happen. It has its flow. We just become more accessible to the greater world. The blocks that are defining us, me and them, or you and them, they dissolve, and there's fear is released, and in its place, confidence, acceptance, understanding, greater capacity for understanding. We have more access to our inner power. It's about an inner power. And I think that is the inner power we speak about as a higher power is related to the qualities of the Brahma Viharas and the qualities that the fuel that really envelops the Dharma that points to freedom. That's where it's all pointing. And we only have access to that when the self is, you know, is like the, you know, whatever the little substance we pour in the water and it dissolves. The more we point to things as they are, like the four foundations of mindfulness points to, you know, observing the body as body. It's not personal. Though I still want to make it all about me, and I got to show up, look good, because I wouldn't want you to see that maybe I'm okay, just okay. And contemplating feelings as feelings, oh my gosh, oh, I have 2 minutes. You know, I thought my feelings were the truth, but we feel our thinking. If we feel our thinking, then if my thinking is skewed, then boy, I can let go of, I can I can be suspect of my feelings and thinking and release that for this pause and to allow and observe and know. Just the noting is just the noticing is enough. So as we move through the Eightfold Path, we see more clearly with our development of concentration and focusing and clear seeing. And then our right view, if you will, is even more subtle. It's not just step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 or path, then we stop. It's then an infusement of just more clarity and depth. So I wanted to end with Wendell Berry's poem on our real work. It may be that when we no longer know what to do, we have come to our real work. And that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. The mind that is not baffled is not employed. The impeded stream is the one that sings. Let's just take a moment here to reflect, resonate, get in touch with what's resonating with you right now. Opening your heart to that. Allowing, observing, holding with care. And I had to think about that poem because I actually thought they made a typo, and it's supposed to be the unimpeded stream, but no, it's the impeded stream. And I said, oh my gosh, another layer peeled off to soften the heart and to trust. So it is our time now, and this is probably the most similar to, so thank you for being here.